Today begins with the one that started it all, Goosebumps number one, Welcome to the Dead House. It is October 2nd and we're on book one, so I've kind of fucked this all up already, but, you know, such is life. All right, let's get to the Dead House to which we are welcomed. Right away, you're probably wondering, what was the first line of the first book? The first line that started it all, that launched 1,000 Scholastic book sales. Josh and I hated our new house. Not overwhelmingly great. Not what you want on your tombstone. If I were R.L. Stine, I might commit some resources to going back in time and writing a new very first line of this empire builder of a series. But hey, this is par for the course. Especially in these early books, kids are constantly moving to a new town or a new house or whatever, and this isn't an unusual plot for this kind of spooky book, so I will allow it. Especially on the basis that there's no way R.L. Stine knew what this would all become. I'm sure if he knew, he would have done something a little flashier. But he probably figured he'd crank out 3 books in a contract for Scholastic and then move on to whatever. A couple kids and their parents show up at the Dead House. The Dead House, which is a shitty old house in a small town somewhere. Let's say Ohio. Stine is from Ohio, and it seems like Ohio would probably have some old rickety houses on a spooky lane or something. Houses that you always want people to visit on House Hunters, but they never do. He's looking for a turnkey craftsman, and she's looking for a creepy Victorian mansion that's haunted as fuck. He doesn't want to pay an arm and a leg, and she's looking for almost exactly that deal. By the way, why are all the haunted houses old Victorian manors? How is it that not one modernist house has been haunted? Are ghosts repelled by drywall and attracted to wood? Do they only like windows that don't really work right and plumbing that can only kind of handle the daintiest of digestive output? Someone needs to look into this. Some kind of buster of ghosts, perhaps. Back to the book. We have a setup here that's classic in 2 aspects. Aspect 1 is that the kids immediately sense that this house is spooky and the parents seem completely oblivious, despite the absolute stock haunted house we're presented with here. It's like Stephen King's house or something, with scary parapets and iron fences and gargoyles and all that stuff. Even the dog is scared, and repeatedly characters are saying, "Our dog is never like this." Which I kind of understand where the parents are coming from on ignoring this one. The first phrase you always hear when a dog jumps up on you, or in my case, bites you in the leg while you're jogging around the park. The first phrase you always hear is, "He never does that." Almost as an accusation, like, "What did you do to make my dog behave in such an unusual way?" I'm not sure if dog owners just never take their dogs into unusual situations, or I guess usual situations, and if you never take your dog into a usual situation, like walking around the park, it becomes an unusual situation. Or if dog owners are like a lot of the parents I worked with at the library, who think their angels couldn't possibly do anything wrong. But either way, it's super annoying. I was about to say this would never work with humans. It's not like you can murder someone and have your lawyer be like, "He never does this." But on the other hand, that does kind of seem like the whole defense strategy of character witnesses and so on, so maybe I'm wrong on that. Classic setup aspect 2 that makes this a pretty obvious spook house is when we hear about how the family came to win this den of goosebumpery. The dad in the story inherited this house from his rich, dead, estranged great-uncle Charles, who he'd never heard about. I guess this family did not follow the cardinal bone thugs rule, "Don't forget Uncle Charles, y'all." Nothing about this transfer of estate seems fishy to the dad, which bothered me until in the book's opening, the dad explains that by moving into this house, which is already paid off, he will never again have to make a mortgage payment, can quit his job, and write full time. That thunk you just heard was my erection hitting the underside of the table because retiring today to write whatever goofy bullshit I want is really the only thing I desire out of life. If someone said, hey Pete, you can quit your job, write full time, but you have to move into a spooky house in a spooky town, I'd be like, sorry, I stopped listening after the part where you said I didn't have to work anymore. I already called my boss, but the good news is that I'm packed. I don't know if there's any hypothetical or supernatural horror that can match up to the real horrors of 9-to-5 work. Even if it turned out that the house was super haunted and I couldn't hack it, I'd be like, well, it was nice to take a break from that rat race for a while, even if the break consisted of me being tormented by ghosts all night, every night. As it stands, my current vacations are often spent doing things like organizing and cleaning my rental apartment, so it's not like I'm having a blasty when I'm off work as it is. Maybe being tormented by the undead would be a change of pace that isn't exactly welcome, but at least a different flavor of unhappiness that I've yet to experience in my lifelong whirlwind tour of sampling different unhappiness cuisine. I am to unhappiness what Anthony Bourdain was to food, always in search of a new flavor. I guess Bourdain was kind of also that with unhappiness too, based on how things ended. The bulk of Welcome to the Dead House reminds me of Dracula, not because of its lasting narrative or vivid characters, but because we are presented with a series of things that should make the protagonist suspicious but do not, such as a dog who never misbehaves barking at everybody. A good tip for people with misbehaved dogs, just say your dog rarely does this until there's a ghost. I think this will render the dog's barking the less concerning part of this interaction and encourage the other parties to be on their way, whether it's because they think there's a ghost or, more likely, because they think you're a nut bar. We also have ghost kids in the house constantly. We have real kids encircling our heroes, not menacingly at first, and then later on, about to beat the shit out of them with a baseball bat. Yes, this happens. Seemed a little dark for 9-year-old Pete. We also have a kid whose flesh burns in the beam of a halogen flashlight. All standard horror movie stuff that should convince people to at least be slightly cautious and never does. And instead, the characters kind of go back and forth between being scared shitless and thinking, well, I guess that's just life. On page 39, the movers drop our hero's dresser and it gets a small scratch. This might seem like a weird detail to include here, and it is, and I'm including it because it's included in the book itself and equally out of place there. A scratch on a piece of furniture might not have been the absolute dead last thing I cared about as a kid, but it's certainly not edging into top importance territory along with things like toads and falling in creeks, and certainly wouldn't have made the final cut of a horror novel I wrote for kids unless that novel was titled Don't Leave Rings on the Coffee Table, and featured a scary granny who hates when you wreck her furniture, which isn't totally irrational from an adult perspective and seems absolutely dumb as fuck when you're a kid. When you're me, somewhere in between the mentality of an adult and a child, I do have to say that it's kind of silly to buy furniture like end tables, dining tables, and coffee tables that are not stained and sealed so that they won't have rings on them. I mean, I kind of get it with a dresser or something. Why would you be setting a perspiring beer can on your dresser? Like at 7 a.m. when you're getting dressed? Woohoo! No adult would do that. But a dining table that requires coasters? What? Now, Welcome to the Dead House fails the does the dog die test, which I put well above the Bechdel test when considering entertainment options. I mean, subconscious disregard for the thoughts and opinions of women is one thing. Outright pupper murder is another. Dogs never did anything to deserve that. Women, on the other hand. Am I right? The dog death in Welcome to the Dead House kind of bummed me out because there's really no reason for it. And I was like, damn, R.L. Stine, you came out of the gate hard on this one. If you'd asked me, I would have thought several Goosebumps books would probably feature a pet in peril, but they'd miraculously survive, like that dog who narrowly avoids getting blowed up in Independence Day by jumping into an alley with a stripper. Meanwhile, Harvey Fierstein bites the big one. Does Fierstein die? DoesFiersteinDie.com is a new site I'm starting to avoid these shocks. to avoid this one specific shock. Wait, Harvey Fierstein was in something called Dark Crystal Age of Resistance? Age of Resistance? Since when is Dark Crystal all Star Wars and shit? The only resistance in Dark Crystal involved resisting the urge to look at David Bowie's schlong outlined in those tights all the time, which a lot of people look at with a weird fondness that I don't understand. Like, it was a sexual awakening, but I'm like, guys, what? I don't think we'd all feel that way if there was a nad shot in Tarzan or a titty came flopping out in The Little Mermaid. This is a children's movie. Why didn't one person on set be like, Dave, we're gonna need you to wear some kind of undergarment? How can a children's movie be reviewed by the phrase, a little too much schlong? However, Welcome to the Dead House might squeak by on a doggy technicality, as I'm not totally sure how Does the Dog Die deals with dogs who die and then are brought back to life as the undead. In order to find out, I checked Frankenweenie, which is a movie where a dog is killed and brought back from the dead, and there is a 5-to-1 vote that yes, the dog dies in that, even though he's resurrected. There's your answer, which I would agree with based on my knowledge of the Bible, which is limited, but does include that Jesus did die. Is there a website for looking up which characters die in the Bible? There has to be, right? Biblepedia? Or, I mean, do we need a Biblepedia if we have the Bible? I guess that's a pretty good reference. Also, I think everyone in the Bible is currently deceased, right? That was quite a few years back now. Anyway, Welcome to the Dead House hums along with various spooky things happening and our narrator talking herself out of being spooked by them until we get to the climax where we find out everyone in town is dead except our heroes. However, our heroes will be dead soon because once every year the townspeople, quote, need blood. For what? Yeah, who knows? Blood is something geists need, so we'll just go with it. They just need it, okay? They don't have to explain it to everyone. Here's a favorite quote of mine from the book. The town. It can't survive without fresh blood. None of us can. You'll understand soon, Amanda. You'll understand why we had to invite you to the house. To the dead house. Which would have been perfect if they'd said welcome you to the dead house, but I guess it's close enough. This need for blood is facilitated by a plan. Every year, the residents of Decapitation Falls, Ohio, or whatever it's called, trick a family into moving into the dead house by saying it was given to them by a dead relative. So there is no great Uncle Charles. This was just a scam offered up to a dad desperate to not lose his entire fucking soul in a cubicle farm and instead to lose his blood in a rural hell house. This Uncle Charles plan sounds kind of stupid, but in a way, it's kind of brilliant. All you have to do is find people who are mildly unhappy in their lives, offer them a free house. Boom, they go into work, clear out their desk, maybe take a dump somewhere in their boss's office, and they are gonzo. This must be incredibly easy as far as victim selection. Let's see, computer, show me a list of people unhappy at work. Huh, that appears to be just the list of every employed person on the planet except for 5 maniacs. All of whom are developmentally disabled characters from movies who spend their days mowing an athletic field at a local college. To be honest, as an elder millennial, I think getting a free house from ghouls who are after my blood is in the top 5 most likely ways for me to eventually own a home at this point, easily beating out saving money and investing wisely. The parents are surrounded in the graveyard at some point, and the kids manage to facilitate an escape by pushing over a huge tree, which lets the sun shine directly on the ritual spot, murdering all the townspeople. There's a fairly long description of the town's ghouls screaming and running around and trying to get out of the light, after which the main character says that she and her brother covered their ears and shut their eyes so they didn't have to witness all the stuff that was just described in detail to the reader. So it's a little like, you fucking sickos just read that shit that we, the characters, felt was far too gruesome. Our end coda is the family moving out of the house, grateful that their house back home hadn't sold yet. As our heroine is getting ready to leave, she sees another family pull up to the house, about to move in, and it seems all the ghosts who were murdered in the graveyard are back and once again up to their old shenanigans. And our heroine turns and runs, the end. Which I'm like, bitch, you narrowly escaped death. It's the middle of the day when the ghosts are at their weakest. You couldn't spare 5 seconds to be like, hi, are you new in town? Estranged uncle gave you this place? Yeah, us too. Don't believe it. Everyone is a vampire. I know you probably won't listen to a tween who tells you this, but just go to the graveyard. Everyone in town has a grave there, and they still use the same name for some reason. You'd think if they could live forever, they'd take a minute to either change their names or destroy their headstones, either way rendering the easiest method of identifying them as ghosts useless, but they haven't done that. Anyway, I'm sure you won't change your mind right this second, but just keep my warning in mind, and as you notice weird shit going on, you'll realize I was right. Hopefully this warning comes early enough to potentially spare you the worst of consequences, and please, if you have a pet, keep it inside and close to you at all times. These fuckers will kill that son of a pup like it's no big thing. I would have preferred a more Beetlejuice ending where the dad, faced with the possibility of going back to work, tried to convince the family that maybe they could just stay in town. It's not so bad. We can board up the doors and windows. That one guy did it in I Am Legend. It seems doable. I would probably rather struggle for my life than work is the message I'm sending here. Please help me. Dear God, I'm in hell. Overall, Welcome to the Dead House was a little more terror-inducing than I expected with the threats of violence and all. I suppose for kids this would be pretty dope. As an adult, it's a very seen-it-done-it kind of thing, but you know, I'm a grown-up with grown-up tastes. Sophisticated. Enigmatic. Classy. Foppish, even. Ultimate. Uber taste. Grand. Grandiose. Magnificent.
Beware, you're in for a scare.